Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
Eunice Power is a cook and catering business owner from Dungarvan in Waterford. She's a regular contributor to the Today Show on TV. She's a former columnist with the Irish Times, and her first book is out now with Gill. It's called My Irish Kitchen Table, something to celebrate in a very tough year. Good morning, Eunice, and thanks so much for coming into studio.
Good morning, Miriam, and thank you for having me.
Tell me, first of all, a bit about your start in cooking and catering. Where did you train?
I went to Shannon and did hotel management, but I was always interested in food and hospitality. And that came from home, from my mum, who was a home economics teacher. But unfortunately, when she got married, she was put out to pasture, the marriage ban. We had this great relationship at home in the kitchen. And if she was ever doing something, I was always stuck in the middle of it, you know. So that's where the love came from. I then went on and did hotel management. Loved that. And then eventually I moved back to Dungarvan in 97. And from there, I started my own business. Started off with a B&B, a little restaurant, and then that sort of morphed into a catering business, which really I was most comfortable with because I'm very good at logistics. And that whole catering business is a brilliant business because you're dealing with people on special occasions and you can really plan to have everything perfect for them. And I love it. And then cooking for me is my life, you know, food is my life. I love the people I work with, the people I meet all the time, from the veg supplier to the butcher to the chefs to the clients. It's great.
And of course, you spent time in London as well, didn't you? Learning a lot.
Yeah, I did. I did some of my craft training in Switzerland, and then I worked in London for 5 or 6 years. But it was always front of house. I didn't actually start to cook for a living until about 2000. I suppose I was always cooking, but I opened a restaurant home in 2000. So it was a sharp learning curve.
Tell me about that first restaurant. Was it in Dungarvan?
Yeah, it was in Dungarvan. We built a B&B where we lived and we had our kids there. I had three little boys, and actually the smallest one wasn't born until 2004. He's big now. So I opened a little restaurant and just cooked away and taught myself how to cook and learned the hard way. You know, so this book is all about my mistakes and learning from my mistakes.
Well, probably the best way to learn. I mean, also, when did your focus switch maybe more to the catering, which you mentioned earlier, than the restaurant business? When did you shift from one to the other?
I shifted when I had my youngest boy, Karen, in 2004. And really, the restaurant at home idea wasn't conducive to family life. I had this idea of having a sort of an agriculture and turismo, you know, where people would come and stay in the countryside and have dinner. But it was really hard to manage that and three small kids. I tried, but it wasn't really good for family life. So then I moved into catering, which is slightly more organised in that you know exactly when your events are on and you can work around that.
And what kind of events do you cater for?
A lot of corporate events, weddings, and family events. Mm. Yeah, so it could be anything. I think we catered for one of the biggest dinners ever in Dublin for 2,500 people.
What?
Yeah, in 2018. I've catered for a huge variety of weddings.
How do you cater for 2,500 people?
Oh, it's like eating an elephant. You break it down into bite-sized pieces. You have a big spreadsheet and you look at it. Like, I find it comfortable. A number I'm comfortable with is 200. So I sort of literally had kitchens and staff for 200 and just multiples of. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And listen, you also have a very famous fish and chips takeaway in Dungarvan. People come from all over to go to it. It's called And Chips.
And Chips, yeah. It's my little pet. I opened And Chips in 2019. It was always something that was the back of my mind. In a seaside, like in a coastal town, they should have fish and chips and sell them on the quay. So when this premises came available, I went for it and opened that. It's open, I think it's going to be 7 years this year. I can never remember what our birthday is. The girls, I always think it's 5. It's like my own birthday. I always think I'm younger than I am. But I think it's 7 years this year. But yeah, it's a gorgeous place. It's really, really busy in the summer. This time of the year, you know, it's a little bit quieter, but that's seasonal life in rural Ireland.
What is the secret, when I have you here, to the perfect chip?
The perfect chip. Okay, it's the perfect potato.
Oh, okay.
Like everything, it starts off with the raw ingredient.
So what's the perfect potato?
So the perfect potato we have at the moment, it's a Maris Piper. It's actually grown literally across the bay where I am in Dungarvan. We have a local grower who grows for us. And it's the perfect Maris Piper. And believe it or not, in Dungarvan, we have a microclimate where it's the perfect growing conditions for Maris Piper. Traditionally, potatoes came from England for or from the UK for chip shops in Ireland. And then I suppose before Brexit, even before that, people, the Borbia started to ask people to look at growing Maris Pipers as an experiment. And in Dungarvan, we can grow them really well. This year has been a brilliant year for potatoes. Now, there are other years that haven't been so good. So at the moment, we're absolutely delighted to be able to buy them locally.
But now that you have the perfect potato, what about the perfect chip? Because to be honest, I suppose I'm trying to find out for myself here. I love chips, but I can't make chips properly at home. How do you make perfect chips?
Oh, sorry. Okay, so peel the potatoes and give them a little quick rinse to wash off some of the starch. And then you blanch them at 160 degrees for 6 minutes. And then you take them out in oil. Now, we use beef fat. We cook in beef fat. It's absolutely delicious. But at home, if you're doing it in, you know, in oil, it's 160 degrees for 6 minutes. And then let them rest and then finish them off for about another 3 to 4 minutes until they're crispy. And you know they're crispy when you shake the basket and you get a good rattle. But you need to twice cook them, really. Blanch them and then cook them.
Sounds like a lot of hard work.
It is. You get very good upper body strength. Will I show you my muscles?
They look good. Yeah. So you are, of course, a regular on the Today Show with Maureen Doughty. I love seeing you on it. You've got a particularly fond relationship, I think, with Doughty. He loves his grub, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. Doughty's lovely. He's, you know, he's easygoing, he's fun. And both of them, and Sinead, they're professionals to their fingertips. They're absolutely brilliant and they're lovely to deal with. So when you're on a show like that for, I think it's 12 years now, you know, you have a very easygoing relationship. You know, it's great. And I cook what he likes. It's a secret.
What's his favourite?
Oh, and like he's really basic, you know.
He's a caring man.
Yeah, he's pretty basic. He likes the really simple things in life, you know, apple crumbles, rhubarb crumbles, bacon and cabbage, cottage pies, no lamb. You know, I have it down to pit pat, but yeah, comfort food.
Oh. So what did you set out to do with this book? It's a beautiful book, actually, Eunice, called My Irish Kitchen Table.
Well, the book kind of wrote itself, Miriam. You know, I've been writing for years and I have all these recipes. And then I suppose the time came to, you know, to put them all together. So it's a book. It's like a kind of a GP of a book, you know. It's got something for every season, for every meal. It's one of those go-to books on a kitchen shelf that you'll use all the time. It's not a very specific book. Like I buy a book, a cookery book every month. And very often I don't open a lot of them. I flick through them, get a bit of inspiration. But they're quite specific. Whereas this is a real family, friends cookbook. You know, you've got everyday dinners, you've got from brown bread to the Christmas cake, and then lots in between. You know, it's a really good, useful book. I'm actually using it myself and I'm delighted with it because I don't have to go and look for the recipes. A lot of my recipes become very faded at the back of my cookery book. So for me, it's really useful to have
and
more collated together.
I found it really useful. I really like the mix as well because there are, you know, the real solid recipes in there like Irish stew and cottage pie and Christmas pudding, but you also offer a little bit of a challenge too with more ambitious ideas, but all ingredients that they're easy to find, which I like.
Yeah, it's a really accessible cookery book. All of the ingredients you can buy in your local supermarket. Or, you know, most of them, I mean, if I'm in Dungarvan, I don't have to go beyond the butcher and the veg shop next door to buy most of my ingredients for the recipes in the book. And the recipes there, the people think that you should know, you should kind of be born known how to, you know, make a roast dinner on Sundays, you know, and it's a real sort of adult thing to do. And I've kind of put those recipes in step by step, because often when I'm walking with my friends or I'm chatting to people, they're asking me, you know, some very simple recipes. And then you've also got other ones that are great for crowds. If you're having a first communion, I always believe, you know, or a confirmation or a party, if you're cooking at home for big numbers, you can do up to about 30 in a regular kitchen with a double oven and a four ring hob. And I've recipes in there that will get you that far, you know, without somebody checking in for my business.
I love as well, though. I mean, you recognise that sometimes cooking a dinner is the last thing any of us want to do. You admit that coming home to a family sometimes can be like a nest of hungry chicks.
Yeah.
So what's the solution?
Oh, you know, train others.
Run away.
Yeah. Or train others to do it themselves. Because actually, most of my friends have become, I think knowing me has improved their cooking skills in their lives, except for my own family, because I always tend to do it for them. Yeah, just do it. Yeah.
There are also little stories, little nuggets of information accompanying the recipes. Was that your own idea to do that?
Yeah.
It's a nice idea.
They are. They're just little, I suppose when I think of a dish, I think of, a little story behind it, or things that make me laugh when I think of it. I mean, I have a chocolate cake there that's a chocolate and raspberry cake that takes me absolutely ages to make. I never make it commercially. I only make it for friends. And one day I brought it to my friend's house for a communion. I had the child's name written on it and the date. I'd gone to loads of trouble. And by the time I got there, the celebrations were well underway. The cake was, you know, put in the back kitchen, and the next day I heard that the cat had slept on the cake.
Oh.
So it's not only delicious but very comfortable. But when I think of that cake, I think all the trouble I went to.
The cat obviously had very good taste as well. There are some recipes that you got from other people in the book. I think an apple cake, your boys love, and a cake recipe from your mum, who's still alive and doing great. Was she always a good cook and baker too?
Oh, she is an amazing cook. She's a much better cook than I will ever be. That's probably because she's older than me and she's more experienced. But we're a great cooking family. There's a lovely Christmas pudding there from my Auntie Joan. My mum's Christmas cake goes back to her. I think it's in a cookery book and it's probably 1940 or something, the original recipe was written down. Some of my friends, like Bridget, makes the best mince pies. Jimmy Kern is a dad of one of my son's friends, and he gave me this recipe on an envelope, and it became a family favourite for us. So, and I'd like to think of people and acknowledge them when I was writing the book. I thought about people a lot.
Yeah, and it comes across. Now, you also mentioned your sons, Eunice, and I was thinking as I came in to interview, it's hard to be fully joyful about the book probably for you, because your beautiful middle son, Jerome, he left this world and went to heaven in May, just very recently. Do you feel up to tell me a little bit about your Jerome?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about Jerome. He's it's all very, it's all very sort of fresh for us. You know, Jerome was wild, adventurous. Nothing he did would ever surprise me, except that he's not around now. So he died very tragically, very suddenly, and I was just lost without him. You know, he was a brilliant character. He was mad into horses. That was his life. He loved music. He was go, 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 go. He was ingenious about finding ways to get to places and to do things. But he was just a brilliant character, and we just really feel his loss. And I suppose as a mother, you know, I have my other two gorgeous boys, Micheál and Kieran. And I try to stay pragmatic and just put one foot in front of the other all the time, you know.
But, you know, it's incredibly difficult, and you're allowed to find it very difficult, as you are now talking about him even.
When we were taking the photographs for the book, Jerome was at home that week, and he was doing a project, which I think everybody was involved in. Jolene Cronin, the photographer, and Orlin Elegant, the stylist, and Fiona was with me in the kitchen. Adele, I think he was kind of going around to all of us looking for help on this project. As everything with college was generally, it took a village to do it. But he loved the photographs. He loved the action. And, you know, he loved eating all the food afterwards. And he had great fun with everyone. And some of the lovely photographs I have of him were taken on the Friday before he died. So for me, it was really important to finish the book because he was so proud of it. And, you know, your children would never tell you they're proud of you because they it's very important for them that you're kept in your place, you know, and that you don't, you know, they love to kind of, you know, have fun with you and put you down or whatever in a fun way. But he was really proud of it. Like, he thought it was class, this book, you know, it was just brilliant. So it was important for me to finish it, to go back and finish the few photographs afterwards and to go on and edit the book. And Isabel Hanrahan really deserves a special thank you from Gil, because she literally had to come down and sit down beside me and go through it line by line, because you know, I found it very hard to concentrate, obviously, afterwards. So the book is really special and I'm really proud of it. And I'm so proud he was involved in it, and I can see his hands all over the pages of it, you know, because they actually are in the photographs. Yeah,
it's almost become a tribute to him in a way.
Yeah, it has. It has in a way. And, you know, I suppose the dishes in the book were, you know, food that they were brought up on, you know, and they enjoyed over the years, except chorizo. Anything to do with chorizo, Jerome absolutely hated. from the minute chorizo was introduced into our house, he was like, no. But everything else he just loved.
And, of course, three little boys growing up. How are your other two sons doing? But I know myself and boys, they're just so full of energy, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. They were like a little litter of pups, you know, just literally rolling around the place. And they were mad about each other. You know, they're all completely different and they were just mad about each other. So they're really sad. I mean, Kieran really misses him, the youngest boy on the horse front, you know, because Jerome was a brilliant rider and he was great to sort out a difficult animal, you know, he was just brilliant. So Kieran really misses him there. And Micheál misses him because Micheál was, you know, Jerome really looked up to Micheál, and they used to have big chats about nutrition. And when you're trying to ride, you're always looking at your weight, you know. So Micheál just trained Jerome for that. But they loved each other. They were great friends, you know. Yeah.
Do you get any solace in faith? I mean, and I'm always interested, do you go to the grave?
I don't really. I find it really hard. I find to look at Jerome's name and the 12th of May, 2025, I find that I find it really hard to see. Maybe I will in time.
Yeah.
And I have some kind of faith, I suppose, but I don't know if it's kind of a deeply religious Catholic faith. I'm not sure. Like, I know that I got great comfort from Jerome's funeral, and, you know, and the community in Dungarvan were amazing to us. You know, the church and our own community. And I try not to go down a rabbit hole of thinking about things too much, or like, you know, Jerome's graduation should have been last week. That was a really difficult week. His inquest was last week. Like, all of these things are really hard to take in. And I don't know if I'm even taking any of it in yet, you know, if I'm still in shock. I'm not sure. But it's, yeah, I wish I had a deep faith and could imagine Jerome in heaven somewhere, but I can't, not yet.
It's so early. Do you find a lot of people I've interviewed say this when they've had their loss, actually throwing yourself back into work almost helps if you stay busy, because you can't keep thinking about the tragedy because you're just so busy trying to distract yourself?
Yeah, I think that for me, certainly that is the thing. I have been really busy at work. I'm really grateful to like the food community in general, and the people I work with are in all different areas of my life are absolutely amazing. And they, you know, they keep me going, and they're brilliant. If I didn't have it, I don't know what I would do. I really don't. I think that if I was at home and I didn't have a job and the kids were gone off to college and I had they are away as they are, you know, and I had the house to myself, I think I'd probably go mad slowly.
And I know, because I've interviewed Paul Flynn from the tannery in Dungarvan before, and I know you're good pals with him and his wife, Maura. Dungarvan does seem to have a really good food scene as well now, Eunice. I presume that's down to hard work by a good few people.
Yeah, it is. We have an amazing food scene, and it's a scene that really comes together from the producers to the shopkeepers to the pubs, the chefs, the restaurants. It's an incredibly supportive group of people, and we're all working towards the common goal of bringing people to Dungarvan. Mm. We have an amazing food festival, which is which incidentally I'm the CEO of and have been for the last couple of years. It will be held in April next year, on the 24th and 26th of April. But it really comes from the heart of the community, and everybody gets involved. People just love it. We're really lucky. Like, it's such a special, vibrant, happening town. Dungarvan is incredible.
And it's beautiful. Well, look, Eunice Parr, great to talk to you today. Thank you so much for coming up from Waterford today to be here. Your book, My Irish Kitchen Table, published by Gale Books, I loved it. It's full of fab recipes and lots of common sense. And I'm so sorry you lost your beautiful son, Jerome.
Thanks, Miriam.
Mind yourself.
Thank you.